Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Jane. We have Wade on the line, and Don will be calling in. Recently in American news, and we will be jumping around to a few different topics tonight, including the holidays, but Donald Trump made a pledge to pull out of Syria immediately in Afghanistan. We currently have 2,000 troops in northern Syria, and there's many fighting factions that have to be recognized that might change shifts or alliances once the United States withdraws. There's the Syrian government, the Hezbollah, Iran, and Russia as the main fighting forces against the Syrian opposition, which includes the Free Syrian Army, the Turkish-backed FSA, the National Front for Liberation. We also have ISIS, which Trump claims is no longer a viable force, and the Democratic Federation of Northern Syria, which includes Kurds from the YPG and the YPJ. Now, I just wanted to read a brief summary in one of the contexts, and then we're going to jump into other news. The Peshmerga has been a strong military force since the early 1920s. They were involved in the first Iraqi Kurdish War, the second Iraqi Kurdish War, the Iran-Iraq War, the Persian Gulf War, the Iraq War, the Iraqi insurgency from 2011 to 2013, the Iraqi Civil War from 2014 to 2017, and the Battle of Kirkuk in 2017. They are now still involved in the Iraqi Kurdish conflict, which involves the Syrian outpost. Peshmerga is a word that was coined. It was a Kurdish resistance that's been around since the 20s, and it means those who face death. I'm going to put myself on speaker just so everybody can hear me. They are the military forces of the federal region of Iraqi Kurdistan. Because the Iraqi army is forbidden by Iraqi law to enter Iraqi Kurdistan, the Peshmerga, along with other security subsidiaries, are responsible for the security of the regions of Iraqi Kurdistan. This also filters into northern Iraq and northern Syria. And as people know, the Turks have a bitterness towards the Kurds, and they're often displaced and killed in that country. These subsidiaries include ASAISH, intelligence agencies, Terasatin Unzinyari, which is another intelligence agency, and Zaravani, a military force. It has been argued that the Peshmerga itself predates Iraq, starting out as a strictly tribal pseudo-military border guard under the Ottomans and the Safavids, a well-trained, disciplined guerrilla force in the 19th century. Formerly, the Peshmerga are under the command of the Kurdistan Regional Government of Peshmerga Affairs. In reality, the Peshmerga force has been largely divided and controlled into separate factions, the Democratic Party of Kurdistan and the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. During the 2003 Iraqi War, the Peshmerga were said to have played a key role in the capture of Saddam Hussein. In 2004, they captured a key al-Qaeda figure, Hassan Ghul, who revealed the identity of Osama bin Laden's messenger, who eventually led to Operation Neptune Spear and the death of OBL, Osama bin Laden. So with the disruption of the region of America pulling out, it could cause more friction in the Western European alliances. Evening, Wade. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, can hear you great. Evening.
We're missing Don and Mike from Singapore. What did you do for the holidays, Wade?
Oh, see, I had to work, so not a whole lot. I did get a chance to see the new Nutcracker film. That was pretty neat.
What did you get
How about
to
you?
See?
The Nutcracker film?
What did
oh,
you
and
get
I was working
see?
On making a the Nutcracker film.
Oh, the film? I didn't really follow
movie.
It, but I heard there's a new ballet star from San Pedro, and it's a black woman. Did you get to see her?
No. I saw the one with I don't know. She wasn't the main character, and I don't know if this was. It was called The Nutcracker in the Four Realms. It had it was a feature film.
Okay, I didn't hear about that actually.
It's pretty good.
I just talked to Ben, and he won't be able to make the show. He's at a birthday party with his two daughters.
Mm.
What's been on your mind this week as far as Don just called in, luckily. What's been on your
mind? Oh, did you get cut off? Hello? Did I lose connection? Hello? Hello? Hello, am I still here? Something's not right. Jane?
Wade, my phone cut off, so I had to call
back
in.
Okay, there we go. Oh, okay.
So what were
all
you
right.
talking about? Don, I'll pull you in about 40 seconds. Talking about Wade?
You're talking about Christmas. I was working on a computer game. I always find it nice to, like, try to make something for the holidays, like do something creative. It's always a good way to celebrate.
Right. You didn't make it back to Arizona with your family, did you?
I did, and I was pretty busy working, flying.
Okay. How often do you drop into your family?
Oh, it's been maybe about once a month around, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I try to get back.
Let's say hi to Don quick. Don?
Hey, Don.
Hello. Hey, Wade. Hey, Jane.
We've had some computer glitches tonight. Well, I just got back from a 10-hour drive, but so far my calls dropped twice, and I'm not sure why.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben can't call in, and John is at work, but I'm still going to try to reach him. We started the show off, Don, by talking about Syria and the potential danger that would be inflicted if America pulled out of Syria too quickly, because it would upset the apple cart of the Democratic Federation of Northern Syria, which has stabilized in the last few years. The YPG and the YPJ, the Syrian opposition and the Free Syrian Army, and it might give a Russian advantage. Plus, I heard on a conservative radio show in LA, I heard someone say something completely absurd. They said that it would work to Israel's advantage if Bashar al-Assad stayed in power a little longer, because that would be helpful for Israel. I guess they meant in terms of predictability.
Hmm.
Well, this week Albert just called it. What do you think of the immediate pullout out of Syria, Don?
Well, it's too sudden. His own cabinet defense doesn't even know that he wants to do that. So this is ridiculous in terms of the fact that he's circumventing the whole process, and he meaning 45. But
I feel like he keeps picking things to do that are within his presidential realm, but in his executive authority, but it doesn't really correlate to common sense.
No, nothing he does is commonsensical. It's about money and power and getting that money to his family. He's been ostracized by the Koch brothers, and that's why he had that little tiff with them. But he is more or less newer money or a different money than they are, so they are loggerheads. And so, you know, he's very, very mad that he can't get accepted into the mainstream rich people. So he's going to do everything he can to destroy what is theirs and put that money into his coffers. But Syria is about Al-Assad, but in just a partial way. Syria is essentially eight different tribes, and
they haven't put a lot of news out lately about the bombing of anything in Syria. Like, they haven't really put any news out, just mainstream news. You know what I mean?
Well, part
yeah.
of it.
And by the way, I got to see Albert this week and John Yoder, and you'll see some new pictures posted on our live show right now. You know how, like, I have a. Yeah, I posted them on Facebook, and I also texted you guys a few pictures.
Yeah. You know, it's an odd thing for a president, I would think, to want to be seen as accepted among mainstream wealthy elite, because, you know, that, like, looks bad for a lot of voters to be, I would think, doesn't it? Like, that they're part of the rich crowd. Like, I would think the image Trump would want to give is he's not part of the rich crowd.
No. He wants to
give.
Well,
don't you think Trump kind of, if Trump had the organizational skills, he could build a political coalition like the Koch brothers behind the scene, but now that he's occupying the executive office, it would be pretty hard for him to fly below the radar and establish that kind of network, even especially since most of Trump's political allies are Southern people with, well, I don't want to say low IQs, but he doesn't have a lot of friends in the political establishment itself.
That's a very good assessment, and what's happening is that he's got that lower end base as opposed to the upper end base, so that's where he's coming from. And why he's having such a problem with his own party, people in his own party are trying to get him out, but that strong base is strong enough. That he stays in, you know, that he's the pinnacle of the party.
Well, a lot of laborers, right? I mean, a lot of
quickly,
union
quickly
types.
Quickly, you guys, Wade, Albert, John's at work, and he just called in. He's been on hold 2 minutes. Wade, hold that thought a minute. Hello, Albert and John. How you doing?
Hey, guys.
Hello, Comrade Jane and fellow comrades. Happy New Year, Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, Feliz Navidad, and Feliz Año Nuevo for all my friends at the border. Just a couple of
By the way, Wade and John, Wade, Albert, and Don are on the line. Just so you know.
Nice. The four amigos. So I'd like to throw three or four down quickly. You guys can discuss or ignore these for later. When I throw a thought down, what happens, it goes in a circle, and about an hour later, I try to recycle another question. So a couple things. One, first grenade. Last week we talked about, I think, sewage being cast out by Israel into the sea and it's affecting Palestinians. Just a thought regarding that. China produces the most pollution on the planet, and we're the largest consumer. Should we demand, since they're killing the planet more than Israel is, should we demand that they stop production of consumable objects, and that we also protest ourselves, since we are the biggest violator of the planet's environment? Issue number two. In regards to, I asked the question, I think, and only Don answered. I was wondering if anyone else in the panel would care, be brave enough to answer, since they are chipping people now, and they now have a flexible adhesive chip, gold chip, you can place on your body. Would our members of our board accept a chip or refuse it and starve if that was the only option given to them? Number three, predictions for the year. Do you think by the end of the year, next year, Donald Trump will be impeached or JFK? Or do you believe that the conspiracy idea is that there's a second server from Benghazi that on it, Hillary had special access codes paid for play, that she also was offering leaked information to Iran through that leaked server, and that there also was Davy Crockett missiles offered on there as well as nukes, and consummated with Obama the $155 billion cash deal, $1.3 billion in cash delivered overnight as a clincher. Thoughts on that? Also, in regards to this subject, I know that last night I did research on national debt. And from the history of our country, from the beginning, I found national debt to be a flat liner that went occasionally up or down a couple of points, except for five different areas. The first time it tripled was on the Civil War. The second time it tripled was on World War I. The next time it went up five times was on World War II, between 1941 and 45. From there, it went a flat line for about 40 years into the 70s or 80s. During Ronald Reagan, national debt went up 2.5. It then slowly rose a little through Bush and Clinton, and then went up double during Bush W., and double again through Obama. So the conclusion is, now this also is in reference to FDR, who in 1933 took us off the gold, confiscated all the gold. We owned $6 billion worth of gold. Our debt to government was, government debt was $30 billion. Private corporation debt was $60 billion. So we owed $90 billion with only $6 billion of gold to back it up. We were basically bankrupt. So FDR confiscated the gold at $20.67 an ounce from all American citizens. Then 2 years later, he offered it to foreign central banks at $35, making a big profit for the country and also putting more money in less hands. He also, in 34, the next year, enacted a 50% silver tax act. So Americans who were trying to buy silver as a backup were not allowed to without a 50% tax on profit. That went on for 30 years. So he created the paper fiat printing machine for inflation. The result of this has been, as of last year, we were $21.3 trillion in debt, which is $63,000 per every living human in the United States of America. Now, those are the facts. And
John, give them a call. We have five people on the line. Give them a chance to respond.
That's why I put that out there, because I may not be able to talk again with those subjects. Those are just some ideas, but I'm actually silenced for the rest of the night. I just wanted to throw some information for your growth.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, but the thing is that I'm sure that Hillary learned that from other people and other diplomats, how to use that server, a second server, get into it. You know, this is Hillary is just as guilty of any crimes as anybody. So this is kind of like, what do you want us to do with this information?
Well, the question is, as you know, military tribunal law changes January 1st. If you didn't know, it's common information on the Internet. I'm only quoting facts. The 305 troops going to Guantanamo Bay, I think over 300 graduates, They've expanded the facilities, including a special facility for 15 high-profile people, whoever it may be, whether it's of a congressional or high-profile. There is a barge, a prison barge, floating outside of New York City that they used in the movie Carlito's Way. It's been transported down to Guantanamo Bay. It's at Florida, I believe, right now. It's been seen floating down there. Also, in regards to, you haven't heard any of this on CNN or MSNBC. In Polk County, they arrested 277 doctors, cops, and prostitutes who are basically human trafficking. And we are already guilty and convicted. You can look this up on the internet. Also, there are four people from the Arkansas swamp who have been, you can look this up, H.L. Moody. You can look up D.A. Jones. Moody, I believe, I might get this confused, was a high-profile Democratic Party fundraiser, good friends of the Clintons. He was convicted of three counts, one of soliciting child pornography, distributing, and also buying it. Basically, he had a chat room that people were viewing a child being raped, and he pleaded guilty in court to this. They were going to sentence him December 7th. They had to postpone it to January. There was the consideration he may be plea bargaining to get information on people higher than him. In the case of Pawhuska County, there was a daycare center, I believe it's Decision Point, and several other health clinics. It's a $52 million Medicare tax fraud operation, but that's in court also. There's a couple more, but basically these are swamp cases that have been going on for several years, a couple of decades. And here's the big key. In regards to the Hillary email information, my sources say Congress people on both sides have known about this the last 2 years, that this is exposed and they are complicit. This will bury a great many people. That's why you're seeing some people resigning, like Paul Ryan. He decided not to, at the peak of his career, 47, he stepped down. You're seeing other people just resign that you have never seen before, including I'll get back to the panel on this, but the point is, I read to Jane Comey's testimony before Congress, where he basically implicates Obama knowing about Hillary's server and emails, and basically no one's been talking about this, and I'm shocked why it's not.
This whole topic has been beaten like a dead horse for the last 2 years, except for this second server that just came out, but nobody knows about yet. But Benghazi was a big traitor situation. The money to Iran that was given to them for promises that were broken. The oil embargoes going through Ukraine because they didn't want that pipeline going to Poland. But I don't understand what E.A. Adams has to do with Paul Ryan.
D.A. Jones. He basically, these people have pleaded guilty in fraud, money, illegal monies. Kind of go to your point. So what you're saying is by January, between January and the rest of this next coming year, nothing will become of Hillary Clinton, her email servers, or anything in the House will try to impeach Trump and basically get him out of office. Is that your bet for the year?
Not necessarily, because Trump is actually doing everyone who's against him a service. The more that he tweets, the more that he exposes himself as just an ignorant rich guy that, you know, that you've got that's putting more coal on the fire, so to speak. Now, the thing about this base that we were talking about is that these people are going to be they're going to be land blasted. They're going to be taken to the woodshed, if you will. And this is going to be ugly if they don't get him out of office.
Well, I guess the question...
Stop. I have a comment, John, on Harold H.L. Moody. That thing you showed me at the Yoshinoya Bowl, I got some other information from the Arkansas local paper. H.L. Moody, he was not tied to the Clintons. He had a county job as a special events coordinator with the Pulaski County Youth Services. He smoked meth out of a glass pipe at his desk at the county admin job and was fired from that. And that was nearly 2 years ago. But he did, do that redistribution of child pornography. But he was also in a drug treatment program. But the only thing he did for the Democratic Party in Arkansas was that he was hired by the county after he was a communications director, but all he basically did is drive people around and do some coordinative stuff. According to this article, he had no ties to the Clinton, and his sophistication as a helper in the Democratic Party of Arkansas was very limited.
So you're saying that
Q drop that you had inflated his ties to the Clinton.
So you're saying that the FBI did send two planes to pick up boxes full of information from the Clinton library and their foundation in August of this year?
Well, according to this article, he was Jason Bennett, a special agent for Homeland Security, said an agent who is participating in an undercover capacity in a video conferencing app used by child pornographers took screenshots of Moody sitting at his desk and conversing with others in a secret chat room. All I'm saying is that he was a low-end county person in youth services. He did some footwork for the Democratic Party, but all I'm saying is he didn't really have strong ties to the upper echelon of the Clinton involvement.
Well, he was chairman of the Pulaski County Democratic Party.
Well, according to this article, he was involved. Being the chairman of a county Democratic Party is not really that upper faced. I'm a precinct chair for my district, and I don't ever do shit.
Let's follow up. The first one that I referred to you was Henry Wilkins IV, former Arkansas State Senator and Jefferson County Judge. Is that considered influential?
Yeah.
When
I Googled it tonight, I didn't find that article about that guy yet.
Who pleaded guilty in April to conspiring to commit offenses against the United States. The schedule for sentencing December 7th. You didn't research that one, Jane? Also, they put it off on a motion granted by Chief U.S. District Judge.
I didn't find anything about the senator. I was just saying the Moody guy was not high up on the food. Give me a second, please. This is my show, dude. The Moody guy was not high up on the food chain. That's all I'm saying.
And you cherry picked out of the list the lowest profile one. Wilkins is a former senator, comes from three generations.
I was looking for an article.
I read
it
this to you verbatim.
I
read this to you verbatim.
John, I didn't hand pick it. All I typed in is former U.S. Senator from Arkansas child pornography, and the first thing that came up was the Moody one.
Right.
And then
well,
I went down the list,
you.
And there was a state senator, a former state senator in November of 2017, a name
well,
that I don't even know.
You're
his
asking
name
me.
Is Ralph. His name is Ralph Shorty.
Would you like to hear something?
That was the second article that came up.
Would you
I'm
like
gonna
to
give
hear
Albert
someone?
And Wade a chance. I'm going to give Albert and Wade a chance to respond. Did you guys, Albert or Wade, did you have any conceptual interpretation of all these facts that John just mentioned?
Wow, there's a lot of facts I'm not familiar with. Albert, anything you want to add?
Albert, are you sleeping or are you on cell phone too?
Hello? Can you hear me?
What are your comments regarding John's comments on the Arkansas correlation with child pornography and his relationship that he tied to the Clintons? Do you think it's significant or insignificant? And is it what Don said? What are we going to do about it? I'd like to hear somebody's comments.
John, I get Don and John confused, but I think John, you're the one that talked for half an hour, right? Because I kind of lost track.
Yeah, he talked about a half hour.
Okay, yeah, I lost
John,
track of what
John's
he told.
John's the NAACP chair from Reno.
Gotcha. I lost track of what John said.
John, can you clarify? John Gallimore, can you clarify what we were talking about?
Well, we were just talking about how we went through a lot because we were talking about the monies that the GOP spent, the people who Hillary Clinton is implicated or will be witnesses against her, and D.A. Jones and H.L. somebody out of Arkansas who might have helped Clinton.
H.L. Moody, who distributed childhood porn. He was a fired county worker and a former chairman of Pulaski County Democratic Party.
My question is, John, you're off mute, is
our entire government going to hinge on what the Q people think are important, or is it more important to focus on getting out of Syria and Afghanistan and how the Q people like John and Ben relate that to draining the swamp? And I just want to know what the significance is. And is every show going to sidebar to the Q conspiracy? Because right now I don't feel like I have any control over my own show.
Sorry about that.
Going on too.
And I'm muting you guys one by one until the person who's doing the dishes can stop. So apparently Hillary Clinton's still in charge of the country, and she has Cracker Jack white folks in Arkansas watching baby porn, because that's the most fucking important thing in our country right now. It doesn't matter how many people get their heads blown off in Syria.
No,
I'm putting myself on mute now for 15 minutes, so go ahead and talk, somebody.
Well, that's what I was going to say about Syria, is that they are a very important piece in the Middle East, and everybody needs to have, they want to have a portion of power. And so this is going to bring the Chinese into it, but we got the Indians who are going to probably get into it at some point. And then we've got Iranians and the Israelis and Russians and us. And this is going to be ugly.
Well, the Russians already control the world through their subversive internet strategy, but they're only out for blood anyways. And now the Chinese are taking over the Antarctica. So, John, what's your commentary on that?
Well, I think we had 3,000 people die on 9/11, and since then we've had. Does anyone know the blood count from the war on terrorism? Is it 500,000 bodies, I believe, billions of dollars? And are any of these countries free, or are they Islamic Sharia law practicing countries that basically don't really will never ever convert to our system? Are we better off just, I mean, from what I understand, we protested Vietnam.
Are they required to convert to our system? And what percentage of those Muslims are actual killers?
Well, here's the question. We wanted out of Vietnam. We wanted out of Korea. We wanted out of Iraq. Now, suddenly, we're leaving Syria and these other countries to go ahead and not sacrifice our kids over there, you know, thousands of them. And people suddenly are against Trump. I thought you were protesting to get out of places like that, out of Southeast Asia and the Middle East.
Yeah. I did see a video that answers Jane's question. There was a survey of people in the Middle East, and I thought it was interesting. So what I found from the survey, they asked several questions, you know, regarding, like, Islamic ideas that we're wondering about, like, you know, how do you treat homosexuals? How do you treat people who leave the faith? Just to summarize, generally the attitudes that are just unacceptable for the U.S., like, you know, like wanting to kill homosexuals and kill apostates and stuff like that, is about a third of them, which is not most. So, you know, it's good that two-thirds of the people there don't have these kinds of mindsets. You know, the problem is a lot of times a violent minority, you know, the people that are willing to fight for something bad can overpower the people that a greater majority that believe in something good. But anyway, that's about what it's looking at. So hopefully the two-thirds better people over there will win out.
I'm in favor of pulling out Scott, but I don't know what the nature of our forces over there, if we have a stable base. But I do want the Northeast region protected, because the YBG and the YPK, they have served and solidified their government with three different strands of minorities, and I don't want that region disrupted again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the main thing there is the Kurds. If we pull out, the Kurds were our allies, and they're going to be left behind, and they've got just our limited pockets of Kurdish people left, so they can within 5 to 10 years almost essentially be taken out by genocide. And that's
Don, Wade and I covered that the first 15 minutes of the show before anyone said. We talked about the Peshmerga that are located in Kurdistan and filtered out through Turkey, Iraq, and Syria, and how they have really been the stronghold in that region. And the military force for the federal region of the Iraqi Kurdistan, and how they helped formed a new government in northern Syria, and that will all go to shreds. Don hit it on the head. If we pull out, it's going to be a major, major disruption.
Exactly.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know what the answer is. It's a difficult thing.
It's okay if you inflict your theory, and it's just that I understand. I'm sorry about the Arkansas County fire that was distributing disturbing child pornography, but we have to weigh those individual cases against what's really going on in the world. And I really think that people have inflated the power vacuum of Hillary Clinton. I don't think the Clintons are the only force in politics that needs sorting out.
Well, here's the thing about child pornography. Let me add to this, because, you know, relating to that, you know, child pornography, or let's just say if you've been convicted of child molestation or even rape, right? I found out that some apartment complex, right? Like, you know, when you get out of prison, you know, of course they won't accept you to live in those apartments. And I'm talking about low budget apartments, like low income apartments. They don't accept certain felons for certain reasons. But here's what I found out: that most, for some odd reason, are not accepting drug convicted felons because they don't want, you know, them selling drugs around their apartment complex. But they will. But they will accept like a rapist or, you know, child pornographer or whatever. They'll accept those, but they don't want drug convicted felons. So some low income apartments that do accept felons, right? They accept other type of felons, like, you know, like I said, like child pornography and rapists, but they don't accept drug convicted felons. You know, which is kind of weird.
Albert, there is a shift. I first saw John's call drop because he's at work. But there's a huge stigma of anybody who has any association with sexual violence or sexual, you know, what do you call it? You know, like any type of inappropriate sexual activity, especially with, like, once you fall under that umbrella, your whole reputation is shot. Look at Kevin Spacey, who's facing more charges now in early February against another 18-year-old who accused him of groping. I mean, you're pretty much useless once you get charges like that.
Even if you're innocent, even if you're not convicted, even if you were found at court to be innocent, and you know what I mean, like you were innocent and you weren't found guilty, right? There'll be some people, some suspicion, some that, oh, he probably did it, you know, he's a probably, you know, he's a,
yeah,
he's a,
that's what I hate.
You'll always have that in your life. You're gonna live that for the rest of your life. Even, you know what I mean, if, let's just say, if a woman, right, like she's a pretty young woman, she says, oh, you know, he raped me or he sexually molested me, and she, you know, and she lied about it, right? But most people would just automatically believe that's true because they'll say, "Oh, why would she lie for no reason?" You know what I mean? Like they don't know the true story, but it can be very, very punishing, very hurtful for innocent for innocent criminal, right? For innocent suspect, I guess. Let me put it that way. For an innocent suspect, it would just completely wreck them, you know, wreck his whole entire, and for him, I mean, and it's for getting, let's just say, even getting a job, right? And I'm not talking about a normal job. I mean, they're not going to sound like they're going to look that up and find that out on Facebook or anything. And like high-end jobs, you know, working in the movie industry, working in there's a lot of background noise, but anyway, working in the movie industry or one of these high-paying jobs, you know what I mean? They will clearly find that out, you know, obviously. And, you know, you would lose great opportunities just because...
Someone has a background noise that's conflicting with our radio show. Can you guys hear it? John, is it you? Okay, John, tell the family
that... Actually, I was going to give you a call about an hour ago, but I'll help both of you.
That's something. I mean, that's a problem I found.
Okay.
Particularly in...
John, I'm muting you for a minute. Go ahead, Todd Wade.
I mean, particularly in California, I found that when I was living there, that just a lot of people couldn't fathom the idea that something bad could be said about someone that's untrue. You know, they anyone who would say, oh, I think that person's a child molester, I think that person is creepy, and the other people, oh, yeah, definitely. Like, you know, people had trouble saying, well, maybe it's not true what someone – and, yeah, the particular – I mean, there's people that are advocating right now that if a guy is accused of rape, he should just be assumed as guilty. And that's insane. Like, no, people need a fair trial. If you find out he definitely did it, okay, yeah, then he should get punished pretty severely. But we need to make sure people did what they're accused of.
I agree. It's kind of a fine line to walk.
I agree. Here's another thing about punishment.
John, you're off mute. John, you can talk.
Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Albert.
Well, in the United States, we punish people very harshly. Like, I mean, when we punish people, we don't just take them to jail. We punish them after they get out of jail, too. Because, sure, when you get out of jail, you know, like, just to say you serve 20 or 40 years in jail and you're finally out of jail, right? You know, you have to, what do you call it? You're on parole. You go on the parole thing where you have to call in and you have to show up to a parole office, and they have to test your urine to see if you didn't do any drugs and stuff like that. And you have to show up there, you know, monthly or weekly, depending on your, you know, what you were, you know, what you got out of prison for. So you have to do that constantly. That's going to take up a lot of your time going back and forth to the parole office. And not just that. So when you apply for a job, right? I mean, if you have a criminal background, you will have a hard time getting a job, right? But also too, mm-hmm. when you apply for a low income apartment, right? Your apartment, low apartments, many low income apartments will not accept you if you have a criminal background, right? So then you'll have a hard time finding somewhere to live. So you have a hard time finding somewhere to live and finding somewhere to work. You know what I mean? And I mean, mm-hmm. and that's just the least of it. So basically, what happens with when people get out of jail, they end up going homeless because it is that hard. It is that hard that people that get out of jail, they don't have any, what you may call it, strong family connections, or you know what I mean, like don't have any support. Like almost everybody that gets out of jail that has no income support, like from family, friends, or whatever, automatically go homeless because obviously it's not hard, you know.
It could be a problem. Same question I asked John earlier. What should we do about it? I'll be at the legislature this year, making sure that we ease some of our reentry, the time that they spend. We're one of the only states that has. You don't have a minimum, so we can give a judge can give it varying sentences to felons or people in jail, and that's going to be, we're going to be working on that. So what do you suggest that we do, Albert?
Albert there. Albert?
I think he lost. He's on the line. He's just not paying attention.
Okay. Well, I'm working to see if we can get some reentry programs and better, more uniform sentencing laws. I don't know.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
You know, same punishment for same crime.
I heard something in the news this week, you guys, about immigration. I read, I don't know if it's true, but Donald Trump wants to deport Vietnamese refugees who started coming over here since the mid-1970s. Now, that seems rather weird. And
well,
some of those people are probably grandparents now. Of like,
I would look into that
generation.
More. That sounds fishy.
Well, one of my...
Yeah, I'm going to look it up while we're talking.
Sure.
One of my in-laws is a former official in the Cambodian army. And I don't know exactly which side, but he could have been, you know, any kind of radical Khmer Rouge or something like that. So you never know what the past means for a lot of these people. You know, the Vietnamese who came over here, some of the Koreans, some of the Chinese, Japanese, they're all, you know, susceptible to coming here for the sex trade. And so, you know, that's why rape is being downgraded, because so many men, white men, can be accused of rape, especially after the Me Too has come out. We're talking about, you know, a segment of society that would be cast away that were supposedly our leaders. But, you know, they're sitting around just like Holmes, you know, looking at child pornography and getting prostitutes at work. A large segment of our workforce is on porn all day.
It was actually the Atlantic Monthly that published the article, and wait, it wasn't fishy. The latest move in the president's long record is the White House has hesitantly backed off the plan in August. But in essence, the administration has now decided that the Vietnamese immigrants who arrived in the country, our country, before the establishment of diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Vietnam, are subject to a standard immigration law, meaning they are all eligible for deportation. The new stance from the White House has efforts to clamp down on immigration, with a frequent complaint on the president's campaign trail. So I think we didn't establish formal Vietnamese relations until recently in the latest phase, because for a long time we were... So anyone who... All right, let me just read one more section. The administration last year began pursuing the deportation of many long-term immigrants from Vietnam, Cambodia, and other countries who the administration alleges are violent criminal aliens. But Washington and Hanoi have a unique 2008 agreement that specifies the deportation of Vietnamese people who arrived in the U.S. before July 12, 1995, the date the two former foes reestablished diplomatic relations. So how can they go back that far is my question.
I don't know. Because I mean, if you're talking about violent people, yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say this is a technicality in that they probably didn't have to go through the current process of immigration, so he's throwing them in a pool where everybody is deportable.
Eligible to be deported?
What?
Okay, the U.S. and the Vietnamese signed a bilateral agreement on removals in 2008 that establishes procedures for deporting Vietnamese citizens who arrived in the U.S. after July 1995 that are subject to final orders of removal. The White House unilaterally reinterpreted the agreement of the spring of 2017 to exempt people convicted of crime from its protections, allowing the administration to send back a small number of pre-1995 Vietnamese immigrants. I don't know. It's something I'm going to have to look into. It's too complicated.
I want to know more details.
In the middle of a show. Yeah, it's too complicated to bring up in the middle of the show.
That's all right, yeah. But, yeah, definitely depend on the details. I mean, if somebody just, like, I don't know, was accused of pushing someone, like, okay, come on. But if somebody's, like, a serial killer, like, well, you know, whatever, get them out of here, right? So it depends on the details, right?
Well, there must
I agree, but it sounds like Donald Trump's purposely looking for countries to weed out. Like, I don't know if he fears the population. Like, our government can't support this type of thing, but, like, there's a large Vietnamese community in Orange County that's they were not reliant on the government, and they've been here for 30 years, so it just seems a little crazy.
Well, if you just extrapolate what Donald Trump has said, he thinks that, you know, he's already tried to set up the illegal importation of a certain country, 7-8 countries. But he says that he wishes that more people would be like the Norwegians. All right, so that gives you a good idea. And we've been over the history of his family and the fact that he's, you know, sleeps with Mein Kampf on his bedroom table. So this is all old news. What we need to do is figure out how we're going to fix things.
Okay.
I haven't heard that
about the Mein Kampf.
Hillary is old news. We haven't fixed it yet. I don't even know if there's a statute of limitations that's going to be on Benghazi, but in terms of the uranium trade and the monies that they traded for public speaking, she and her husband, you know, we're talking about major occurrences of breaking the law and being, you know, treasonous and traitors. And this is everybody. This is not just Hillary or Trump. You know, one of the worst things that can happen to us was 9/11 by, you know, W knew what was happening. He knew it was coming. And the thing is, you know, he didn't do anything about it. He covered it up. And that's why the Republican Party let Obama win. They didn't know they were going to go up against Obama at that time, but whoever the Democratic candidate was, they were going to let them win because they that would bring the pressure off of what could have been indictments throughout the Bush administration. So these guys are bringing out strategies that people think one way. You know, the lay person is going to say, why did they do that? And they don't understand the inherent reasons for these moves.
You know, I always think when we hear about all this trouble with, I mean, either side, if it's the Democrats or the Republicans or whatever, you know, the problem, it comes down to the federal government has too much power. If we didn't have so much power centralized in the federal government, you know, we wouldn't have to worry about Hillary's or Trump's or whoever it is that we're concerned about. And it's too bad Mike's not around. You know, he wants a big, powerful global government. I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be, then you'd have worldwide Hillary's and Trump's.
I just don't like the idea, like, John's been texting me. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me? Yeah, John's been texting me. The thing is see, I was with John for 2 hours on Wednesday. The Q people dwell only on the deep state key actors that they keep trying to vilify. And they don't really fast forward into modern day effects. Like, it doesn't matter about all those people from 2008 to 2016. You know what? I don't think Obama was directly corrupt. I don't care what John Orban tell me, but we have to fast forward to what Trump's doing now. Whether
he was directly.
Well, let's just say that Trump is trying to effort trying to clean out the deep state. Some of his moves are impulsive and harsh, and he is not unifying the country, and I don't have faith in his leadership. And I'm only worried about the present at this particular point. Yes, I like reflecting on the past when it comes to Henry Kissinger's book, Diplomacy, and the European alliances, but I don't like creating a mind construct that's only going to look for major flaws and leadership.
And that's what I'm talking about, is that we need to – we're the people. We,
yeah. There we go.
Have the vote. We
yep.
pay their salaries. So
yep.
we're the ones who are going to have to make determination on how this country is going to lead. This last election was an excellent indication on what we're
referendum.
Going to do as a referendum, as what we're going to do with the country in the next probably at least three presidencies after 2020. And if the Democrats take charge of the presidency in 2020, I can't see them losing it probably until at least 2032. So
oh, my gosh. That's a nightmare.
So that's be three sessions where we're probably going to have a Democratic Congress, a Democratic presidency, and who knows about the Senate. But this is going to be something that's relatively historic because there have been very few three-term Democratic or Republican tours. So this is going to be something that if 2020, the Republicans don't win, we're looking at the possibility of having all kinds of history being made politically. And I don't know if that's going to be good or bad. I live right next to California, and I see how two liberal people make they lose control of their vicinity, of their community. And so that's
mm-hmm.
something that that we have to be very, very careful of if it goes the other way. If we can, you know, we can't have progressives in there just willy-nilly increasing taxes for no reason, you know, and doing other things with climate control and things like that that push it the other way. You know, for instance, the Department of Forestry, everyone knows that we need to have forests burned and naturally. They have to naturally
mm-hmm.
burn themselves up in order to maintain a conservancy, if you want to call it what a word is. Conservation is the natural is trying to meld natural circumstances with what people do, what the experts, so-called experts, do. And that's a big problem because nobody understands conservation really is. There's so many different facts about it, if you will. But that's just an example of how confusing all of this can be. And as I mentioned, at the start of the year, we're going to look at uranium coming back as a – because Trump is supposedly going to declare that he's going to stop the uranium sale from Russia. And we only produce 3% of our uranium. So that's going to put a huge burden on our system. So we're looking at something that's coming along that's going to potentially continue to destroy our environment, because we're going to have to start gearing up to mine much more uranium. So we're at a crossroads, and it's almost like we're damned if we do, and we're damned if we don't.
Yeah. Well, you know, people, regular people have solutions. I mean, batteries and solar panels are getting cheaper and more abundant. And there's things like crowdfunding, crowdsourcing. Regular people can solve problems. So the government needs to get out of people's way. It's the restrictions that are holding people back. So if decisions are made locally and we don't have big leaders causing trouble, there's a lot people can do. Yeah,
I was going to tell you guys, I saw online that the Trump supporters raised $250,000, like, on a GoFundMe website for to build a border wall.
That's
like
interesting.
They did that
15,
on their own.
17 million.
That's up to 17 million, you know.
17 million.
But about a week ago, it was 250,000.
Yeah.
Pretty
so it
funny.
Shows what it shows what's possible, right? I mean, that's how it should be done. It's like people voluntarily saying, you know, okay, this is what I want. I'm going to put my money into it. Nobody, nothing needs to be stolen from people. People can give for what they want. And it can happen.
I agree, but I don't necessarily support the border wall, but even with its unpopularity in certain segments of society, it's still popular enough for people to personally donate and not wait on government reliance to get it done. But it still has to be under the jurisdiction of the government.
Interesting. What about the campaign promise that Mexico is going to build a wall?
I never understood that. Honestly, I don't know. I never, if I could meet Trump, I'd ask him.
The Mexican governor said F.O. to Trump. That's what happened.
Yep, and that, you know, because, you know, I believe in a wall. I believe we should have several walls. And the biggest wall between us and Canada, because they're importing more immigrants, illegal immigrants, than anybody right now.
Hmm.
All right. Well,
I
you
agree.
Know. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree that. Well, I mean, I would say that. Of course, this should, more walls should be added anywhere here or there when there's no walls. And of course, you know, but, I mean, the way they vent people, and you know. It's just a really long process. A lot of people that are migrating, right? There, you know, thousands of people coming, crossing the border to Mexico and trying to get into the United States, right? A lot of those people, they already tried to sign in, you know, do the whole process and paperwork, and it just for some people it just takes a little long, you know, it'd be like, you know, 5-10 years. I mean, you know, I've seen stories of people that, you know, waited 20 years and they said that they were going to get killed in their country. They signed to go to live in the United States to get out from being murdered, right? And some get murdered before they even get to the United States because the paperwork took a long time and they already got murdered and it's already too late. You know, they were trying to escape from being killed. The paperwork took too long and then they got killed. And then, you know, some actually, you know, waited out and finally after many years finally, you know, got the paperwork got approved and they finally came to the United States, you know. But it's just the process is just really terrible. It's just a really terrible process.
Yeah. That's a good point. And it's ridiculous, you know, like why is it so complicated? I don't know, you know, that you need to check and make sure, well, you know, people are escaping from violence, so you need to make sure whoever's coming through is not the person that's the reason they're trying to escape, and you know that they're willing to work. And I don't know why it's so complicated, right? Just
exactly, and
it shouldn't take 10 years.
I mean, they should put at least some safety nets, emergency safety nets. Like if they're trying to escape from being murdered, they should be brought immediately, and then do the paperwork and keep him in the United States, but in a safe area where you can keep watching him so he doesn't go out and do terrorist, whatever stuff. That, you know, maybe he's a terrorist, who knows, you know. But, you know, bring him immediately, do the paperwork and keep watch, and then if he doesn't qualify, then, you know, send him back. And if he does qualify, then keep him there. You know, at least something, right?
Yeah.
At least something. If they do nothing and the paperwork just sits for years, you know what I mean? After they finally approve them, you know, who knows? He can already be dead. I mean, that's how horrible it is.
What happens is you have a situation where you punish the people trying to do things the right way, and then, you know, you're basically rewarded. You're better off doing it the wrong way, right? I mean, I would think, you know, it'd be good advice to tell people just run across the desert because you're going to get in here easier, right? Like, shouldn't be, yeah.
Better chance of trying to, you know, jump the fence and run through, you know, doing that than paperwork. I mean, the
right.
All the people in the United States by legitimate, by paperwork, and people, you know, jumping the fence, you stand better chances jumping the fence than doing the paperwork. It's just better. You just get better opportunity. It's better for you to do it. By calculations, you just stand better chance of doing it illegally than legally.
Yeah, you get, you know, it's you're not giving any incentive for people to, you're saying stand in line, and then you're not giving any incentive for people to actually stay in line. And which, you know, I think, I mean, a wall, I don't understand why people are so against a wall. It's like it would make sure everybody comes through the front door. But then, like Albert pointed out, yeah, why is it taking 10 years? Let's get this process going a lot better.
I'm not against, this is the reason I am against the wall. Because I think a geographic, a physical barrier is not going to stop the corruption or the people who really want to get in. And also with the drug cartel and the tunnels that are built underneath the ground, like with that El Chapo guy and stuff, like I just don't think it's really going to stop things. And ultimately, it's not going to solve the foreign policy relations.
Yeah.
That exists between the U.S. and Mexico.
Yeah, it would slow things down a lot. And one of the things, yeah, people have been talking about the violence and the human trafficking, and, you know, to take care of the people that are affected by this, like, that are coming from the South, that are trying to escape violence. Like, you know, if somebody is running from a murderer in your neighborhood and comes to your house, you're not going to just leave the door open for the murderer to follow him in. You have to make sure that you protect the people that come here for protection.
But I don't think a wall is going to help the people like El Salvadorans and other Central Americans. It's not going to help those people.
No, we need better, a better way to process them, you know, a better way that's not, you know, extremely biased, and it's not extremely, you know, venting. In fact, we probably need more workers processing this, because they're not enough. I mean, when they try to process them, it's not like all the guys, you know, not a guy like thousands of people that will process the paperwork or working out. They vent it out to a small office. It's just ridiculous. You know, I mean, probably just more workers and more, you know, and you know what I mean? Because the amount of people trying to get in the United States, right? I mean, from the South, not, you know, I mean, and trying to do the paperwork, it's just, there's a lot of paperwork to be done, and it's not getting done. It's like a DMV. You go to a DMV, right? And you know you're gonna be there for hours and hours and hours. You're like, why is this so? And you ask yourself, why is this DMV so? This DMV office so small compared to the city I live in? It's a really big city. There's a lot of people that live here, and yet there's like this small DMV. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? I mean, there should be at least like two or three D&Ds around my block, at least.
Albert,
you know?
I have to interrupt you guys a second. I'm with family now, and I'm flying back to Minnesota in the morning. So does somebody want to close the show out for me? Because I want to wrap it up right now.
Yeah, I'm good.
Sure.
Don? Okay, let's wrap it up, you guys. Okay?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. We've covered a lot of topics tonight, and I don't know if we want to keep moving around, or if we want to drill down into the what
we're
talking
about. I think everybody's kind of in ready to wrap it up, Don.
Yeah, key points.
Okay.
Yeah, so I can start. My conclusion is that it just seems like with the Trump administration, no matter what his intentions are, he kind of shoots from the hip. And I don't know what his clear overarching objectives are as far as getting things on track, because this week alone with the government shutdown, all three stock markets took a major dip and a major rise, and it's not creating any permanent change. I am in favor of removing troops from the Middle East, but in the long term, is that going to make Russia more distrustful and more dominant in the region? There's a lot of things to consider in 2019, and I think Trump should pick long-term objectives over short-term solutions. With that, I'll pass, and somebody else can go.
All right. I was interested in the fundraising of the wall, not so much about the wall, but just look at what can happen if people voluntarily put funds into something that they want. And so that, you know, let's try to use that for other things. Let's try to have other ideas or things that can move us forward. And instead of high taxes, let's just let people voluntarily contribute to what they believe in themselves, and then we don't have to fight over things as much when we're not having to force people to pay for what we want. I think that's good.
Yes, and obviously, with a corrupted system, you know, you're going to get corrupted people, and corrupted people, you're going to get, you know, a lot of people on the bottom, they're getting fucked over, you know, and they have to literally, you know, get displaced, and, you know, now we've got a bunch of migrants, coming all the way from the south, you know, going through Mexico, you know, and some trying to get to the U.S. Then, of course, in the Middle East, right? I mean, a lot of people being, you know, displaced. So it's just a corrupted world out there, and if you present a human being with a shitload of money saying, hey, all you have to do is just sign these papers and, you know, do it this way, and you're like, all right, you know, what do you expect, right? I mean, it's just a corrupted system. That's how you corrupt the people.
Very good. You know, for the most part, that's right. One of the things that I was going to mention is that I already went over how we're changing. We're going to be using a lot more paper, a lot more plastic for our finances. 2019 is going to be the start of where we don't have to use money, and that's going to be extremely significant, especially if we play the stock market and go into Visa or MasterCard, buy some of that, because we're walking out of stores now. Amazon is opening up those stores. I had envisioned something like that at a grocery store, where each item is encased, and if you want it, you pay your money right there, and that item pops out. So, you know, that would be excellent for, you know, your regular items. It'd be a little more difficult with fruits and vegetables and meats, mainly because the sizes and portions and amounts, you may not have a choice.
Yeah. I return that with Jeff Bezos, the way he treats his employees, ridiculous.
Well, in China, they're already doing that. You can leave your house, and you don't even need a wallet. So that's going to be a major thing that we're going to start looking at the change in our entire financial system. Your president has already started it with his tax reform that goes into effect on the 1st of January, and that is going to siphon a lot of money from especially white people. His own base is going to get sucked up. He's going to kick them in the teeth and take everything they got. $12 million that he gave in subsidies to the farmers is just a pittance to all of the subsidies white rich men get. And they're all on welfare, and they're guilty. They know it, and that's why they can't talk to anyone in a reasonable fashion. So we're looking at the possibility of an upheaval in the next year or two simply because of a new dearth of economic inequality that includes people of the majority race. So get ready for some kind of upheaval in the next year or two, and make sure that everybody is well centered or well sheltered from those things. Housing bubble is not out of the question, even though the houses are stagnant right now, and they're plummeting in sales around the country. And we're looking at the fact that we're going to be really strained. So get prepared and find what you really believe in, what is going to be real and fair for that person and their family, and make sure that when or if it does crash down, that you're going to be as safe as possible.
Makes sense, sir.
And that's my conclusion.
All right.
I'm gonna close the show out, guys. I'll see you guys next week. I'll see you next year.
We'll see you then. Yep.
I'll see you next year.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Happy New Year.
Thanks for another year.
I hope to get down to Chicago by June. I'm gonna pass through there. I'll let you know, okay? Nice seeing you, Albert,
good.
This week. Nice seeing
for
you,
sure.
Albert.
Same here.
To see you soon, Don.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye, you guys. Happy New Year.